LNB's audio diary. Is this thing on?
Yeah, yes, no, yeah.
Sorry. LNB's audio diary for the 7th of January, 2024. It is a Sunday, and it's just about 9:30 in the morning. It is snowing. It is snowing, and it is starting to come down heavy. They are threatening bad weather today, not just some flurries, not just some temporary stuff, but it's supposed to be really bad and really windy and really wintry today. I just left the shelter. I took care of the rabbit, and I came to get some greens that I want to drop off there in case I can't get in tomorrow. I already warned them, if the weather looks bad, I'm not coming. That's just, you know, I'm not risking my life for something that isn't strictly necessary, because the rabbit is fine. I set him up today so he could go for several days and still be fine. He'll have water, he'll have food, everything. He'll be fine. So there's no point in trying to get in if there's no need, right? However, Mrs. Bronx is there today. She had to, you know, she's working in the shelter, not in the clinic. And she's over there, and they've decided, because of the predicted weather and now real weather, they're going to be closing at noon. However, as I say, it's only 9:30 and it's already started. They weren't expecting this until like around 11:30. So I told her, if the road's bad, I'm just pulling you out of there, just because we got to be safe when we're driving. So I was going to go home and put everything away and, you know, do all that. But the fact of the matter is, I might not be able to get in if I do that. So I'm hanging around and I'm keeping an eye on the road. And then I'm going to call her and say, nope, we're gone. That's it. And she can just tell them, you're beat. They're really cool there. So they're, you know, they understand how the reality of things, unlike many bosses I've had in the past. So let's see. What have I been up to? Well, I posted a bunch of, can I do that? There we are. I have some hand sanitizer, and it's in this thing that won't leak, because the last one I had leaked, so that's no good. This doesn't leak, but it's got this, like, pinhole bladder thing on the top that you have to kind of squeeze to get anything out of. And, of course, when you do that, it goes everywhere. I just splattered it everywhere. Oh, well. I'll figure out how to use it in time. It smells nice, though. Mrs. Bronx cooks up this thing. She's got some hand sanitizer that she picked up. You know, it's kind of a holdover from the COVID era. And it's alcohol, but it's not super stringent. It's not super strong. And otherwise, it's really neutral. And then she puts some essential oils in it. And this is like, I don't know, like a citrus and a vanilla. It's really quite lovely. All right. Anyway, I did that because I had just come out of Safeway supermarket and picked up those greens and some other stuff for us. I got a big roast. I'm going to make a roast, not tonight, but tomorrow. I already have something lined up for today, so we'll do okay. I'm going to get on the road. I'm going to see what this road looks like. And if the road is still fine, fine. But I got to park somewhere to keep an eye on the road. If I'm off where I, you know, can't see anything, then I can't judge. And I'm in the parking lot, and it's coming down pretty heavily here in the parking lot. But, you know, it's the parking lot. So, a lot of people dashing in. All right, I have to creep out, creep, because I can't see around this big giant truck next to me. And we're good. All right. Yes, yes, roads may be icy, drive with care. Okay, we're doing that. And, sorry, I'm watching the parking lot. Okay, so what's up with me? Yeah, yesterday I posted a couple of audio diaries. That was late last night. I was about to go to bed, and I was like, nah, let me get rid of those things. Let me take care of that. And I did that. But during the evening, the early part of the evening, I did some more playtesting of the not just the game system, the Star Drifter role-playing game, but also, most specifically, of the game system with regards to the Star Drifter Universal Dungeon Terrain, or SUDT. The SUDT. All right. And the SUDT is, you know, it's proposed as kind of this halfway point between Theater of the Mind and more practical placement of tokens and things like that. I'm not sure there's a name for that sort of, like a wargamey sort of setup for things like combat, right? Now, that's primarily what it's used for. I mean, it's primarily what it's even good for. You wouldn't use it for just regular encounters, and I wouldn't even use it myself for dungeon crawl. You know, you can. You absolutely can, and I intend to test that when the time comes. And to a slight extent, I did something like that last night, and I'll explain all that. But I think I mentioned a while ago that I came up with a list of scenarios, of combat scenarios, just adventure scenarios, that I can roll for randomly on the fly and create an on-the-fly sort of adventure, or really it's a combat scenario. Again, I'm testing the SUDT. So the truth of the matter is, because this road is actually already getting covered. Driving is all right so far, but yeah, we gotta go. This is coming down fast. Let's see. People are just rolling by. They're fine with it. That's fine. Fine for them. Fine for some. So anyway, yeah. I have this list, and it's basically, it's like, I think there are 8 scenarios, and I roll randomly, and each one's got a brief description of what the setup is, right? And all of them are designed to be used on the SUDT. Now then, the one I rolled last night was the player characters have been hired to map out a chasm, right? Now that almost sounds like a D&D scenario, but the idea here is that it's on a terraformed world, and there's this weird chasm with a strange sort of terrain setup so that mapping... they can't do it automatically from satellites or from passes overhead. Someone's got to go down there with a mapping device and walk through the whole thing. And that's all they really need to do. It's not extensive. So in this scenario, there are criminals down there. You know, decide what they are. Are they escaped criminals? Are they a gang of thieves? Whatever the hell they are. They're down there. And you encounter them. You didn't know they were there. And you encounter them. That's the basic setup. So I have it set so that you enter from one side, and I have a section right down the middle of the SUDT for a what I would call close combat. Right? Remember, it's we have 3 zones, 3 basic zones in this ring of the SUDT. We have close, near, and far, okay? So, close, I decided, you know, and I have a close section right in the middle, and then I have 2 auxiliary ones on either side of it. So if I needed to, I have a kind of a corridor of close action areas. The other ones, the scale is different, right? The hexes on the other sections correspond to further and further distances than close is allowing, all right? So, you know, I explained all this before, and if you really need to, if you know, I have demonstrated the SUDT in a video on, and I can link to that in the show notes for this thing. But that it doesn't cover this adventure. It's just a explanation of the SUDT. But I was testing other things too, other things I've made. Now I tried to put it all together, right? All right, so that's the scenario. Roll 1d4 for the number of rounds before the bad guys encounter the good guys, right? Now, I have four player characters that I pulled out, right? I have five that are all written up and ready to go. I rolled randomly to see who would be there, okay? So I've got my four characters that are set, and there's a certain number of three different types of NPCs, the bad guys, that you're going to be dealing with. One is average, one is competent, and one is superior, okay? The superior, there's only one, and he, that's the leader, right? And the other ones, I have tokens specifically for them that I can tell, you know, which category they fall into, whether average or the other one. And the superior NPC, he gets a token just like the player characters. Very easy to spot, you know, what everybody is. And it matters because the average NPCs only have pistols. The competent NPCs, and there's fewer of them, right? You have more of the average, fewer of the competent. And the competent, they have rifles, and that does more damage in the fight, and they have better armor. And then the superior, he is sitting there waiting, and he's got good armor, and he's got a rifle as well as a mini grenade, right? So he's better armed, better armored. And this particular guy, I decided early on, if he gets threatened really seriously, you know, if he actually gets seriously threatened, he's just going to leave. Right? This is not fight to the death, man. This man will run, right? Well, that's the scenario. And he's also more concerned about his personal safety. So he's going to keep guys around him. And I rolled dice to see how many he'd have. He'd have, out of four, I had four competent NPCs. And he got three of them. One of them went into the field. The rest are all average, right? Now then, four player characters against, there were six average, really one competent, and the others were hanging back, right? So that's actually, you know, just from a die rolling standpoint, that's actually going to be pretty clear as to how this will end. Player characters are going to take the edge. They're better armored. They're better. Their skill point, you know, their skill levels are higher, so they're going to hit more often, and they're going to be playing to a certain style of, they're going to have a certain strategy. Right. So all of that is the setup, right? So the player characters, I rolled die. They don't find out about they're surprised by the NPCs. Right? Now, the NPCs are criminals, and they are going to attack immediately because they're hiding out and they don't want anyone to know about them. The NPCs, remember, or the player characters, rather, remember, their job is specific. Their job is to map this thing. It's not to bring people in, you know, bring them to justice or any of that. They've got a job to do, right? So this is the stuff that's important to keep in mind. Hold on, I'm going to call Mrs. Bronx. Okay, I told her and we got to go. So I told her 20 minutes, and I don't feel comfortable about that, frankly. But anyway, it is coming down pretty quickly. Anyway, okay, so player characters are surprised. In Star Drifter, if you are ambushed, and that's what this count says, there are no rolls for initiative. An ambush is an automatic initiative. You can just attack. You don't have to roll for initiative to see who goes first, all right? And an ambush is any scenario where the ambushed party has no real reason to expect to be attacked. There is a caveat. There is an aspect of X-Mil characters with the X-Mil background. They have a chance of not detecting an attack, but looking at an area and thinking to themselves, this would be a really bad place to get attacked. Right here is a death box. We, you know, hey everybody, just heads up, this is a dangerous spot, right? That's a skill that they have. It's not a skill. They don't have to roll for it. It's an ability. We'll say it's an ability that they have. And I have one X-Mel in the party. So I rolled for him, missed his roll. Okay, it's a save, and he missed his save. So they're totally unaware. And two NPCs, open up on the player characters. So we're into it, right? But there's a distance factor in all this, right? Now, as you know, once again, the SUDT is concentric rings, right? It's a round thing. It's made with hexes, so it's not like a perfect pizza or something like that. But it's you know, there are rings around the centerpiece, and the centerpiece is close combat where you can just fight hand to hand if you want to. But the further out you go, the further you are away from each other. Okay, now then. I rolled randomly beforehand where all of the NPCs were going to be. The only one I held back on was the leader, and I chose, you know, I said to myself, you know, I get to choose where he's going to be. That's the one conceit to my personal will as opposed to randomness, right? So I chose that he would be on the far side of the board and more or less in the middle of one of the rings, right? Now, the player characters come in on the outer ring. The outer ring, it takes 4 rounds to leave any hex that you're in, right? So they step in, they have 4 rounds before they can move forward, all right? And then another 4 rounds before they can move forward into the next set of rings. And then it's 2 rounds to move forward, 2 rounds to move forward, and then finally you're in the center, right? So it takes you longer to get to move forward that, you know, the further out you go. Right now, because I established that this is a chasm, anybody on the side who ends up on the side is above them looking down. That changes their ability to hit. Okay, now then, I have rules about cover, taking cover, right? And it has to do with how hard the surface is you're hiding behind and how hidden you are, right? And you know, the best cover is like hiding behind a cement wall or something like that, right? Now they're down there and I rolled for rocks, right? Whatever area they're in, I roll 1d6, and that's the number of big boulders that are in their way and that they've had to navigate around or have to move around. They're also good for cover, right? So all of these factors are there. They get attacked. One of the characters gets hit, but he's got good armor. You can't, on this first attack, you can't count shields because they don't think they're going to get attacked. So the shield isn't being presented in front of him. He's just walking down. But the dude that got hit, and I rolled randomly for who it was, the dude that got hit, he has a chest plate and a flak vest underneath that, right? So that's pretty good armor. That's pretty good. And he got hit and he took some damage off of his stamina after the armor was taken into consideration. So he was doing okay. But that's when they got on, and nobody else got hit, right? So at this stage, I have 3 NPCs that can hit these guys. They're close enough, right? Now, technically speaking, anybody could hit anybody on this board because they all have ranged weapons, right? However, the pistols have some pretty hard limits with regards to distance. The rifles can hit anybody on the board. The pistols can hit people if they're close enough. I didn't get into distances on the weapons last night. So in my in the way I played it, if you have a ranged weapon, you can hit anybody on the board. One thing I was counting though was ammunition, right? And all of the NPCs only have 1 magazine for their weapons. Why? Because they're hiding out. They don't have a lot. And they have people and they gotta spread out the ammunition as best they can. In my mind, especially the average NPCs in this scenario, they're all like, you know, gangbanger types who think they're all cool. They got a 9mm in their pants, you know, the waistband of their pants, and they think they're all that. That's what they are. And they don't know how to fight against the mercenaries who are, you know, been hired to do a job, right? So these guys open up. They happen to hit one of them. The others start moving forward, right? The ones that are going to be reasonably within range, right? And only one of them has a rifle, and he's out of range. Well, he's not close to them yet, close enough to see them, right? So here's the thing. Once the player characters are aware of what's going on and they crouch down, the average players, because of the negative situational modifiers or sit mods that are on the average NPCs that are attacking them, they actually can't hit the player characters. They can't hit them. The negative modifiers bring them down to zero chance. They have no chance of doing it. Yes, I can roll. I can roll a 20-sided die and see if they get a lucky hit. I could do that. I didn't worry about that. But if they were player characters, or if this was a scenario with player characters, I'd probably do that. But I'm just testing the rules. But that's the thing. You should always roll just in case you get a critical. All right. And bother. Nobody got criticals last night. Nobody got criticals. And nobody fumbled. So it was just straight up, you know, slog back and forth. Anyway. So they attack, they're starting to move in. They want to move in close enough to get a better shot because the player characters are behind rocks. So for one round, the player character shot back, they missed everybody because they're, you know, there are modifiers because the bad guys, they're behind rocks too, right? Boulders and stuff. So the leader of the group, she says, everybody, hold your ammo. You know, until you have a clean shot, don't waste ammo, right? We're just gonna rush forward. You know, we're gonna keep on the move. We're gonna use the rocks for cover. We're gonna go from rock to rock to rock, and we're just gonna keep rushing forward, right? And that's what they did, right? Which was a really good strategy, right? Because I calculated it out, I figured it out, and while they were more vulnerable than if they just crouched behind the rocks, they were still getting cover because there was just so many rocks and boulders and stuff in the way. So rather than having no chance to hit them, or virtually no chance to hit them, the player characters, or the NPCs rather, now had just a bad chance to hit them, right? So they move forward, and I, you know, counted down the rounds, the combat rounds, as they were going along. The bad guys kept shooting. Some of them moved up, shooting. Okay, a couple of the average guys, they ran out of bullets, right? Then I have to roll. You run out of bullets, you don't have any reloads, you haven't hit anybody, what do, right? Well, it depends. I have something called a nerve score for NPCs. We roll for them. If they make their nerve score, then they're gonna continue the fight. If they don't, then that's it. They're either gonna run, they're gonna sit down, they're gonna hide, they're gonna give up, whatever the scenario calls for. They're not fighting anymore, okay? So, two of the guys, they ran out of bullets. They're out of it. They're not gonna pursue it. You know, what can I do? They're a long way away. It's gonna take at least two or three rounds just to get to them. And then they're gonna use skin against rifles and stuff, right? So no, they're out. But keep in mind about this, because later on, somebody made his roll and decided, I'm the man, I'm the guy. Right? And he's going to rush forward and you know, duke it out. That didn't work out too well for him. Anyway, player characters move forward. Somebody else gets hit. And from behind by somebody with a rifle who is up on the ridge. Right? And those guys are hard to hit. But not impossible. All right? So player characters take out a couple of people with bullets. The others run out of bullets. They're out of play. Right? By this point, finally, the player characters move up to a point. We're not in the center, right? I haven't moved them to the close zone. However, the NPCs have been moving forward to cut them off. And at this stage, now they are close, right? So I move that fight to the central zone, right? And I roll some dice to see how many boulders are in the way and how we're going to play this out. I throw down the boulders. Player characters come rushing in, NPCs, I roll for initiative. Now, in the advanced initiative system in Star Drifter, everybody gets a roll and you go down the list, okay? Slows things down, but I have to test it all out, so that's what I use. The simple initiative is just one side rolls one and the other side rolls one, and you just go ahead. And whoever gets to go first, they get to go first, but everything's more or less simultaneously. I don't know why I even have them roll. I think I'm going to change that. Everybody gets to go. Everybody gets their attack. Everybody gets to do what they want to do. You just pick one side to look at first. Yeah, that now that I think about it, that's ridiculous. You don't even need to let them roll because everything is considered to be happening simultaneously. Okay. At any rate, that's not the initiative system I used. I did do individual initiatives for this. And I went down the line and I had it all written out. I picked up some wet erase markers and I have dry erase markers. I, you know, drew out a chart, a small chart, not a big one, not like my big advanced one, something small enough to fit on a little tiny whiteboard I've got. And I drew out, you know, a chart for hit points and saves and all of that ammo. I'm counting up ammo, everything that I need for this particular scenario on this little tiny whiteboard in the wet erase markers, right? And then I fill it in with the dry erase marker. And that way I can erase stuff as I go along without wiping out the entire form. All right, so we're all set. And I'm counting down the number of rounds and I'm counting down the hit points. They take out a couple of the bad guys to the point where we're finally at about half. Now I have to roll for the group, right? So when it comes to nerve scores, if an individual NPC takes half their hit points, they have to roll a nerve score. If half their group is gone, they roll a nerve score. If their leader takes off on them and they see it or they know about it, they have to roll a nerve score. If they run out of bullets, anything that could really seriously impede them in this fight, they have to roll a nerve score. And the number of factors that they are facing makes it a worse score, a harder score to make a successful roll. And once they fail, that's it. They're done. They're not fighting, right? Now, if they don't have a choice, right? If you don't give them a choice, they will fight, and they'll fight as normal. But if you aren't going to engage with them, they will not engage with you at that point, no matter what it was that they wanted to do originally, okay? So at this stage, the group is like, we're done. We're out. And I think there are only two left, and they fled, right? Now we have the boss. His entire team just either left, or they were killed, or whatever, right? They're out of ammo and are effectively useless, right? He has to decide. So I roll for him. He fails. What did I say he was going to do to begin with? He's just going to leave. So he and his three minions have left. And that's it. Now there's a character. Despite the fact that he's absolutely generic, pulled right from the book, all his stats and everything are right from the rule book, right? But there's a character I can use again, right? Now he can, you know, he's got some character and he's got some history with the player characters. Now that's somebody I can use in a later adventure. And bit by bit, you know, if he survives the next one, because we know what he'll do, he's not, you know, he's no hero and he's no super ambitious guy and he's not crazy. So if he thinks it's looking bad, he's taken off. And he's got some bodyguards, right? So that worked out. I played for about 2 hours, I think, 2.5 hours. It was actually a lot of fun. I found, you know, some things that I think are working pretty well with the game system and with the application of the SUDT and how I used it, right? Would I have done things a little bit differently? Yeah, I might have laid things out a little bit differently. I mean, it was easy enough for me to follow, but if at some point after I've done some more testing with all this, I'm going to video one of these fights, one of these scenarios. And at that stage, I want things to be a lot easier to understand and follow. So I probably should have thrown down some, I have some tiles that I can throw down that, you know, give you some visual cues as to where the borders are of certain things. I should have thrown a couple of those down to make it a little bit easier to follow. I should have maybe shifted things to maybe slightly different close order sections using the auxiliaries or something like that. Because the way it played out, the close order fights that they were having were in the center, while the long distance fights, when they were being picked at by the other guys, they were off to one side. And it probably would have been easier if I had set that up, you know, in a manner that was a little bit easier for other people to follow. Again, I had no problem with it. But, you know, if you were looking at this for the first time, you'd have no clue what I was doing. So, you know, it's structural things like that that might be easier. And that's important for me. It's important for me to learn about that. It's important for me to understand that, because if I ever play in person with this thing with other people, I want it laid out in a fashion that everybody can understand what's going on, so that I don't have to keep reminding them that, no, 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 that's not here. You're not actually close to me. You're actually a long way away. You have to use your missile weapon. You can't attack me with your sword, blah, 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 right? So, yeah, it's a learning process, but overall it works, and it works with a lot of random factors thrown in there, you know, the setup and the scenario. Yes, it could have been a tougher fight. And I'm beginning to, now I'm going to test this a little bit more, but I'm beginning to think that I should make my NPCs a little bit tougher. A little bit tougher, right? Now, in the book, I don't have these NPCs built with armor and weapons and stuff like that. I designed the armor and weapons for these characters specifically for this test scenario. But my player characters are rolling through them. Now, this is the second one of these big, kind of long structured scenarios that I have tested. And I think I mentioned one before. I had another one where they were up against some pirates, right? And in that one of the player characters almost died. He came very, very close to dying. So it isn't a done deal. And it is a matter of chance. I was rolling to see who was going to get picked off, who was going to get targeted from a distance, who's going to get shot. And the guy with the weakest armor, you know, he wasn't targeted directly, you know, until much later. And even then, the bad guy rolled poorly, and he rolled well, so he took virtually no damage. I take that back. He did get hit hard. Now, he needs better armor. Now, my question is, should I hand out character points and money for these scenarios? Well, up until now, I haven't decided on that. But maybe from this point forward, I will, right? I'll decide. I'll roll some dice as to what the scenario is worth to them. That is, what they're going to get paid for doing this, or what kind of money they might be able to get out of this in some fashion, right? Maybe they're, you know, they've been hired to do a job, or maybe they're, they have to bring something back and sell it. Whatever, whatever. There are a couple of different scenarios, and I'm trying to run through them all. So if I roll a die and I get something I've already done, I'm going to keep rolling until I get something I haven't done just yet. So yeah, maybe I should decide how much money they might get out of this thing and how many character points they've earned because of it, right? The NPCs, nobody on the list is an exceptional NPC. Exceptional NPCs get rolled up just like player characters, and they can progress just like player characters. And I have to hand out character points, and, you know, if there's money to be gotten by the NPCs, they get that as well, you know. They can progress, in other words, as time goes on. And, you know, that's how that's designed. So I don't have any exceptional NPCs for this set of scenarios. Maybe if this guy that ran away, if he gets away another time, maybe I'll turn him into one, right? That'll be a bit of a boost for him. But from that point on, they have an arch enemy, and that might be fun. So, wow, this snow is really coming down. They need to get the heck out of Dodge, man. It's warm in here. I'm gonna turn this down. So that's how it's been so far. That's how, I had a lot of fun. And it's just me. It's just me, some dice and some crap I drag out. I have my tokens, and I have, other things. I've been working on different stuff, and, you know, I have a couple of ideas for other videos that I want to incorporate, you know, to make them all part of this Star Drifter tabletop role-playing game experience that I've been enjoying, right, and that I've been taking on. And I think there's a lot of potential for it. The the great thing about testing all this is finding where the flaws are. Finding, you know, gaffes that I didn't see or issues I didn't see. As I say, there are some structural elements to all of this that I really ought to, you know, get a handle on. More detail, you know, more detail. Like maybe average will only have one magazine, but maybe competent will have two and superior will have three magazines available to them for their weapons, right? And that's assuming they're using firearms. I should, I have the NPCs set up so that they're all using firearms. But I can change that. You know, I can have some of them, they only have clubs or knives or swords, short swords are a thing in Star Drifter. I could do that. There's a thing in the new rules called a stun club or a stun stick. And it's basically a club, but it's also, it delivers a stun hit. And those are a thing that, you know, you get stunned or you get knocked out unconscious and the game ends very quickly. I can maybe test it with some NPCs having stunners. You know, the fight that I had before in the first, not this one from last night, but the one before, the NPCs, or the player characters rather, one player character had a whole bunch of stunners on him. You know, I wrote him up that way. He's got a bunch of stunners so that, you know, he goes into a fight. Those are what he pulls out first, you know, and those are all the civilian ones. They only get one, they're one shot, one use, kind of like a taser today, right? You know, bang and you drop it, bang and you drop it. And it's not bang, it's zap, 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 and he just throws them down. And you can buy those things all day, right? You can buy those things all day. They're not super cheap, but considering the fact that it saved their bacon in that last fight, I think it might be worth it for maybe, you know, either some of them to have those available to them, or, you know, I think it would be worthwhile to test it with NPCs using those. And it should be interesting. It should be interesting. I have other rules for other types of ammo, and you know, there's a lot to test. There's an awful lot to test, but I want to get a better handle on just the basic structure of how a fight is going to play out. And once I have that, then I'm going to start tweaking some of the aspects of the game to see where it goes. Because I'm telling you, if you gave, you know, like maybe every other character, every other NPC that you're facing, or even two or three, just two or three of them that you're facing, if you gave them stunners, stun weapons, that could radically change the fight, you know, because then you have bad die rolls and you're done, you know. Different quality ones might impose sit mods. There are lots of variations I could, you know, bring into the game, but so far, I'm really quite encouraged by the success I feel I had last night and the time before for major encounters for a group of player characters and a larger group of enemy combatants that they're facing. And to me, I think it's a lot of fun, and there's just no reason not to pursue it. You know, not to pursue it and not to keep going. I think there's a lot of potential there. Does this mean that anybody can play? Well, yes and no. I mean, you don't need an SUDT to play any of this. I should probably, you know, once I've a stat, because I'm testing the SUDT, once I'm done with that part of it, I can switch this to regular encounter tiles or a big encounter map and more or less run the same things over again. There's no real need, though, because the SUDT is designed to allow for large scale fights in a small space, right? And I'm not certain that anything like that is necessary, right? The area that I have to play in and to film in, I don't have a lot of space, right? In fact, when the video, you know, when I do video at one of these fights, one of these adventures, I'm not going to be able to show you all my equipment. I'll probably display it. That's what I'll be using. And, you know, here's the tablet where I have the PDF of the rules. That's what I'll be using. But up until that point, you know, I won't be able to do anything else, because the only thing that can be seen once the camera's, you know, focused is the SUDT. But that's where the action's taking place, so I, you know, that's the very minimum that you need. And unfortunately, the very minimum is all I'm able, you know, I'll be able to do. But I'll, you know, I'll drag out anything into the camera frame that, you know, needs to be seen. But most things, once you've introduced it and said, yeah, this is how this works, fine. Another thing I did last night, another thing I was testing, I have the die tower, or the die roller that I talked about last time, and the timer, you know, it goes 1 to 10. I used that for the rounds. Worked perfectly. Worked really, really well. I loved it, right? I also have set that up so that I can keep my dice on the platform for the timer, and they don't fall off. I set it up so that there's a, you know, a fence all the way around them, essentially. So if I separate the die tower from the counter and its base, then I have a space behind the counter on that same piece where I can keep my dice. And I call that a dice corral, okay? Because that's where I'm just putting my dice down, and that's where they're gonna stay, so I don't have to go looking for them. They're not on, you know, I'm squatting on the floor when I'm working. They're not under my knees. They didn't go rolling across the floor. They're right there, right? Then I pick them up, I drop them into the die tower, and out of the die tower tray, I put them back in the corral. That's the way it's supposed to work. There have been, you know, I'm in the bad habit of just, because I'm moving so fast, I'm just leaving stuff in my wake, right? I'm just, causing all sorts of havoc. But I'm doing better, and I'm training myself to use it. I did last night. It worked beautifully. Kept everything nice and organized when I was diligent about it. Overall, it's just been a success. It was, you know, I pictured in my mind how this stuff could be used, the equipment could be used, all of it. And so far, I've met with success. I haven't been balked or turned away by any major gaffes or major problems with them. So I'm very happy about that. I'm very happy. But I'm up for major problems, right? I'm up to see those because I want to identify them so that I can eliminate them. I can fix them. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So as I say, there are a couple of things I need to work on, and I need to make a little bit different. And at some point or other, I will get the CTC, that is the combat tracking chart, printed up and either laminated or in plastic sleeves so that I can use markers on them and use them over and over. And that will have everything that I need to keep track of. You know, again, when you're using every single rule and every single option for combat in Star Drifter, it does become a resource management game, right? All onto itself. You know, you have the fight going on, but you also have to keep track of everything, and it becomes, you know, maybe a little less fun if you're doing everything, unless you enjoy that. Some people really love that, keeping track of it all. But in a regular game session with actual players, I would make them keep track of their stuff and trust them to do it. I'm not Captain Bly about the rules about that stuff. You know, it's just like, try to keep it in mind, try to remember, you know, to roll for, you know, the amount of bullets that you fired in that last attack. I kept forgetting. I had to roll the dice sometimes two or three rounds later. It's like, oh yeah, I didn't do that for this guy for the last three rounds, and I had to roll three dice and add it up, and suddenly, whoop, he's dry, you know? That does happen. That does happen, but, you know, it's fine. It's all fine. You know, in the end, it's just a game, so, you know, you pick and choose the stuff that you enjoy, and that's the nice thing about optional rules that add complexity if you need them to, you know? In a regular fight, you know, especially a quick and dirty fight in a game, if it's not going to last for several rounds, I wouldn't track bullets. I wouldn't bother tracking bullets, and I wouldn't bother asking them to roll dice or anything. You know, whatever. You fire a couple rounds, whatever. You know, you get back and you find a couple of bullets left in your box, and you know, fill up the magazine, and you're ready to go. You know, it doesn't matter in those circumstances. Now then, One thing that does matter, and I have to work on, I want express rules for chases, right? I want express rules for chases, and I think I talked about this. I haven't created any rules for that just yet. I don't have any rules for that just yet. But I need them, and I want them, and then I will test those on the SUDT. I'm going to design it so that all you need is a hex board or whatever board you're using. I use hexes, and I'm not going to concern myself whether or not, you know, this works better with a hex than it does with, you know, squares or a grid or whatever. I'm not going to do that. You know, everybody, they can adapt their own game style and the way they're working their own way. People who are using UDTs, just the ultimate dungeon terrain that are actually round, some of those do have grids on them. A lot of them do, but some of them don't, and people don't even worry about it. They're not using anything like that anymore if they're using their SUDT, because the zones tell you how far away everything is and how long or what you can do while you're in there, and they generally will make a house call about how long it takes to go from one zone to the other and how long it'll take to get to the center where you can do regular fighting. So some of them don't even use distances at all. And they just, you know, like, don't worry about range. You know, if you're here, you can use this. If you're here, you can use this. And if you're in the center, you get to fight up and close up. I'm not that freewheeling with the rules, because again, I got to test everything, and I got to test ranges, and I got to test all that stuff. So I'm not that freewheeling with it. I do think that there's a lot of validity to that style of game. It's very fast. You don't have to measure anything. You don't have to count squares. I had to count lots of squares or hexes last night. So there was a lot of that. And if you're not up for that, then, you know, it does slow things down. It does slow things down. So anyway, I'm talking a lot and repeating myself because I'm excited. I think it's a lot of fun. And it's, you know, you work for a long time, and it's been months for me that I've been working on the basic design of the SUDT, and I created my tokens, right? You know, I didn't create the art, and I didn't have them, you know, I didn't print them, but it was my design, my will to get these things done. So I made my tokens work, right? I also have a concept for making my own tokens by hand now, right? That's a thing I intend to start doing instead of paying to have any more made, right? And I have ideas for how I'm going to go about that, because I want a few more of them. I want a few more of them, and I want some for different types of things. I don't have any for robots necessarily. I wouldn't mind having a few for robots, maybe some animals. People can run into animals in Star Drifter. So stuff like that. Stuff like that. I also think maybe I should have a few tokens to, like, last night I used just a hex square or a hex piece that I have cut out separately. I was using those for the boulders, and I used an extra one to mark where the party was when they were not up close, right? When they weren't up fighting close, when they were just out and about. And I used one of those. So I should probably make some tokens just for that, right? I have some small wooden hexes, and I use those for my NPCs. They're all numbered, so I can keep track of everybody. I have a whole bunch more that I haven't numbered at all. And I can, you know, use different colors for them. You flip them over when they're dead or out of the fight anyway. You know, it just, you know, little things like this keep you very organized and keep you going, you know. It is really... It was just a pleasure. I'm very, very excited to continue doing this. And I might do more of it when I get home today. We'll see. See how it works out. I might have to shovel. Ugh. So, anyway, I'm going to let it go because I know I'm boring you. So, anyway, that's it for today, because I am at the clinic waiting for Mrs. Brooks.